You're listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves.
Welcome to Atlanta Baseball Talk, show number 401. Today is Sunday, May 13th, 2018, and my name is Steve. I'm joined by both Hammy and Kurt, and happy Mother's Day to all you moms out there. And folks, before we get started, please help out the podcast by spreading the word. Subscribe, write a review, share links on Twitter and Facebook. Our lives depend on it. Okay. I just said people really aren't really, it's you not, know.
You're trying a new tax.
It's not really moving the needle, so I thought I would go with that.
That's a good
idea. We're in a podcast prison camp.
Exactly.
Please. Okay. In tonight's show, we'll discuss where the credit should go for the team's hot start, Hammy's all-time favorite Brave, Jose Bautista, Markakis' unbelievable season, and much more. But first, a quick break. So, guys, there's been two really grim moments in the season so far, moments where it felt like the wheels were about to come off and things would be more like we expected they would be before the season began. Those first two losses in Cincinnati, and then the sweep at the hands of the Giants last week at SunTrust Park.
Yep.
But as each week passes, the team just continues to win, to perform. I mean, following Sunday's win in Miami, the team is a season-high 9 games over .500. And depending on what Arizona does Sunday night, they'll either have the most wins in the National League or will be one shy of Arizona. So, Ham, it's crazy. It is crazy.
Yeah.
And the whole National League East, well, the whole meaning the three teams that matter, us and the Nationals and the Phillies. I mean, none
Mets.
Of us are losing.
How quickly? Oh, the Mets. How quickly they have fallen.
Good Lord.
Yep. Anyway, but that's not, so this Ham, is not we, Mets musings. Shout
that's
out.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, it's easy, or it has been easy over the last few years for sure to throw blame around, but this team deserves a lot of credit for what they've accomplished so far. So where does that credit go?
Well, I'm going to look at the front office and, you know, I think if the credit for the way the offense has been, you know, leading the National League this year, has been Freeman, Acuna, and Albies. And you think of those three, and those are Frank Wren guys, right? I mean, he drafted Freeman and Acuna and, you know, signed Acuna and Albies. So, I mean, that all happened on his watch. So I think you have to give him some credit for that. Certainly that credit is soured a little bit when you think that he also brought in, and this is a long list, Derek Lowe, Kawakami, Ugla.
Hey, watch it on Kawakami.
Upton, the biggest if you look at, you know, we all love Kawakami, and he had some huge starts. But if you look at his just, you know, sort
do we
of...
all love Kawakami? Hold on, I'd like to stop there.
Okay, Kurt loves
what?
Kawakami.
Okay,
love...
Kurt, that's fine. We can let Kurt have that.
He did not have a great career here. And Melvin Upton. So he, you know, he certainly created some things we had to overcome to be where we are now. But in a lot of ways, if you think of Freeman, Acuna, and Albies, I think Frank Wren deserves a little bit of the credit.
Well, for sure. And also with Freeman, that in 2014, Wren made the right choice. He chose Freeman over Hayward.
Right.
You know, and Wren turned Hayward into Shelby Miller, who turned into Dansby. I mean, that's all Frank Wren gets credit for.
And
that.
Ender.
Right. And Ender. Oh, my God. I forgot an Ender.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the bridge then to Copy right there. Right. I mean, I think Copy, you know, while some of it may not have been technically legal,
come on, let's not quibble.
We won't quibble. And, you know, and I mean, I thought Hart is included this as well, right?
Right, Copy and Hart kind of.
They sort of blend together. At one point, took the, you know, it was always been a tag team. But, I mean, Gattis and Jordan Walden for Fulte and Ruiz, turning Shelby Miller back into Swanson and Inciarte and Aaron Blair. He drafted in 2015, and we talked about this recently, Allard, Soroka, Riley, and Minter, and four of the first five picks. We'll talk about this later. Andrelton for Newcomb, Malik Smith for Gohara, signing Markakis as a free agent. You know, I mean, Coppi certainly did a lot more right than he did wrong, and he certainly did a lot more right than Frank Wren did, than Frank Wren did wrong. And obviously his reign was a little shorter and more illegal. But, you know.
You know, and you know what? Markakis is on Wren's ledger. Markakis signed – Wren signed Markakis.
I looked at that. You know, it was like Markakis signed in November of 2017, and I think Wren was gone by then. I think Markakis was
Signed in 14, right?
14, sorry. And I think that in November of 14, and Wren was gone in 14. I think Wren left before Markakis was signed.
Okay. Wren was there in the beginning of 14 because he did the Freeman extension.
Right. But Markakis signed in the offseason, and I think that was after Wren had been let go.
And we're going to talk about Markakis in a second, but isn't it insane that part of the magic of this year is Nick Markakis?
I know.
And a huge part of it. I mean, like a tremendously large part of it.
Yeah.
So crazy.
So I think that a lot of the credit right now is obviously Wren has a big piece. I think as time goes on, Coppi will get more and more of that because this whole team is Coppi in a lot of ways, you know. All the pitching that's coming up, and he set a lot of places. And then, I mean, you have to give Anthopoulos a little bit of credit, right? He made a couple of good game time decisions with Flaherty. Tucker, you know, I mean, he's done, he certainly has done well with what he's had to play with.
Well, and, you know, you guys are going to talk about the front office, but I think that it can't be overlooked what this coaching staff has done. We have the fifth youngest team in baseball right now, and even amongst this podcast, we did not think that they were going to be much above 500, save Steve and his eternal optimism. God bless him. But you had all that situation in the off season that took place, and it really could have sort of caused quite a disruption and frankly even created an excuse if this season had sort of muddled through another sort of 500 season. But you're looking at a team, I mean, just running through these numbers, and I will do this super quick. First in average, second in OBP, second in slugging, second in OPS, third in runs, second in hits, third in stolen bases. I mean, the Braves, who have not stolen a base in 15 years, as I highlighted earlier a couple of shows ago, third in stolen bases.
I don't think
bases.
That's factually accurate. They have
it is.
No. Okay, wow, surprising.
It's true. you know, 10th in average. So with a young team, and there's spots that obviously they're not the most talented team in the world, but to be where they are, to have the tied with the second for the best record in the National League, the third or fourth best average or record in Major League Baseball, to be sitting here on top of the schedule that they've had to play, all the road games they've had to play, you have to give so much credit to Snitker for keeping this all together.
Hey, now.
For Kevin Seitzer, for Chuck Hernandez, to Eric Young, who obviously is the one that's really installed this running game, to Ron Washington, you know, that whole group, which is basically a bunch of guys who effectively have been managers themselves. Walt Weiss being brought over, I don't know what role he has played in all this, but you really have to give them a lot of credit for the way that they've handled this team and what they've gotten out of this team to this point.
Yeah, I mean, it may have been a couple years too early, right? But Chuck Hernandez was brought in because he's good with young pitchers. And look at what we're getting from Newcomb and Soroka and Folty. And you're right, Kurt. I mean, Seitzer and Castro, this offense has a personality, which we haven't seen in forever. I mean, they have an approach, you know? And right, the aggressive base running and Snitker. I mean, kudos to Snitker and Kurt. Maybe this is the Walt Weiss influence, putting Albies and Acuna at 1 and 2. Not a very Snitker-like move, you know what I mean? But he did it. And the team chemistry. I mean, there's clearly really strong team chemistry, and you gotta you have to hand some of that credit to Snitker for that.
You still keep him on next year?
yeah. I mean, look, I don't love Snitker and some of the moves are insane, but if the Braves keep going like they're going, how do you fire him?
Yeah.
I don't see it.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, and the one other thing I want to add, and of course it's all well and good the moves that were made and the coaches and all that. But more than any of that, of course, it's the players who are just kicking butt. I mean, just playing out of their minds, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, so a ton of credit just has to go to the guys who are out there scoring huge runs in the first, huge runs in the eighth. You know what I mean? Like, I think it may have been Grant McCauley had tweeted the number of runs scored per inning. And I think the first inning may have been the most. And then 8 and 9 was high up on the list of, you know, where they're scoring the most runs. I mean, this team just does a ton of things right. And it's, you know, the players are grinding. Yeah.
We're contenders. I mean, obviously, it's duh. We're in first place, you know, in the National League East. But we're contending. It's amazing that we are contending. And the strong pitching from, you know, everyone but McCarthy recently. Like, you know, Tehran, a lot of amazing starts. Fulte, a lot of amazing starts. Newcomb, a lot of amazing starts. Soroka has looked good. Sanchez looked good. I mean, a lot
and
of
McCarthy for the first six starts looked great.
Yeah, so everyone is, I mean, they firing on all cylinders.
They grinded, and Steve and I were texting about this. They grinded out an inning last night against the Marlins. 53 pitches they saw in an inning. I mean, I don't know if somebody can look that up, but I don't remember ever hearing about an inning where there were 53 pitches thrown. I mean, that's just insane.
That Saturday night game was such a remarkable game. Just one of the best wins I can remember for this team in a long time. Because, I mean, Kurt, you're right. Like, being up, the Bautista error, tying it back up, and then those amazing at-bats from Ender and Flowers and Camargo to grind those at-bats out, get those walks, get those runs in. It was just – Saturday night was an incredible game.
Yeah, and they had two hits, I think, in that inning.
Right, yeah, there was a lead. Yeah.
Pitches. I mean, it's crazy. You know, the other thing is with that, they're very aggressive. You talk about the first inning runs, but they're almost last in Major League Baseball in strikeouts. It's just the turnover. And I will say it one more time and maybe the last time, but this is so much more fun than that team that was all or nothing, you know, just to watch this, to watch the energy. Yeah. I mean, just to create these at-bats, to create these, you know, I honestly, being the eternal pessimist that I am, I feel like there's some point where this is going to break, that the youth, that, like you said, Steve, the players just playing out of their minds, Markakis, you know, I mean, you feel like there's going to be some course correction, but I'm just constantly proven wrong. And it's so much fun to be proven wrong night after night as they keep on playing at such a high level, and at such an exciting level too. And the National League East is a pretty solid division, you know? I mean,
yeah.
It's not a cakewalk by any stretch of the imagination. So,
and we're a quarter away through the season, right? I mean, it's for real.
And yeah. I have honestly stopped worrying about that the offense is a mirage. I totally believe the offense. You know, the start, I mean, every night, right? I mean, and this is any season, any night, your starting pitcher can have a bad start and it's just going to affect the game dramatically. But I'm not worried about the offense anymore. And I'm getting less and less worried about, you know, guys like Newcomb and Tehran and Fulte. I mean, yeah, it's just been amazing.
God, how could you even think about worrying about Newcomb? I mean, that guy is just unbelievable.
The staff ace.
He's locked in.
All right. So, guys, the Bautista era has not gotten off to a scorching start, to put it mildly. He has 4 hits in 25 at-bats.
Okay. I know.
One double, one homer, OBP under 300, slugging in the low 300s, a 0 war, according to Fangraphs, as of Sunday. And then there was Saturday night, right? I referred to it the bases loaded, 2-out error that led to a run, that led to the next batter, that led to the double, that led to a lead for the Marlins. And then, of course, he hits a homer in the next inning, making it somewhat complicated, I guess. But, Kurt, I'll start with you. What do you think the Braves should do with Jose Bautista?
I feel like this one should almost be thrown to him and make him defend him.
I'm done defending him. Sorry to kill the suspense.
Right.
Austin, but unload on me if you want to, just so you know. Just let me have it, Kurt. I'm ready.
Austin Riley batting 345 at Gwinnett right now.
And not to mention on Sunday, the Mother's Day game, he hit three home runs,
right,
including a grand slam.
A grand slam, yeah.
Unbelievable.
I don't think you can bring up Austin Riley at this point. They made mention of the game when Soroka pitched that the three youngest players in MLB were going to bat in the same inning for the Braves, and you throw in Gohara, and they have like four of the seven youngest players in. Is that right? Four of the yeah. So I don't think you can really add Austin Riley to this mix unless he continues to bat 345 at Gwinnett, in which case, sure. But he's clearly not any solution, not a long term, not a short term. The question marks about his defense have been played out, and the issues with his offense are being pretty much laid out on a day to day basis. He's 4 for 24, I think, right now, something along those lines. So I think you just cut your losses and get rid of him. And when Dansby comes back, whatever the case might be, you let Flaherty start, you let Camargo, you let them platoon, whatever. Bautista needs to. He's providing nothing. I just don't see why he would stay around here any longer than he needs to.
Yeah, I mean, if the front office is still convinced that he can be a piece for the team and add right-handed power, send him back to AAA to get more consistent at-bats, get more, get more opportunity to tighten up his defense. I mean, you've got all these young pitchers. You can't have shoddy defense behind them. I mean, it's a whole other thing, right? And not to mention he's not bringing the right-handed power. I mean,
you don't
the whole
need
thing.
Him. He feels no need, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's not part. You know, he's not been around long enough to be part of the clubhouse. He's not batting. He can't catch up with fastballs. He's mediocre in the field at best. And you don't need him. You have Flaherty. You have Camargo. He brings nothing. I say send him down or just DFA him.
Yeah.
And wait. And we have no need to really rush on this, right? There's no. It's funny we're talking about competing. If we're buyers at the trade deadline, there's no third baseman out there that I think a team is going to be selling that we would want, right? So just wait on – it's not going to get better than what we have right now with Camargo and Flaherty, which is just fine. And then when Riley is ready, bring him up. And there we go, right? We're certainly succeeding with Flaherty and Camargo before Bautista was here. We don't need him. Get rid of him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll always question why they brought him up so quickly. And I don't know if it was the agreement that they had when they brought him on that he would be brought up by a certain point. But I mean, it wasn't like he was doing anything at Gwinnett when they brought him up.
Yeah, he had a couple of three, decent games. And yeah, Anthopoulos was just convinced he was going to be a big power from the right hand side. I don't get it. So, Hammy, look, I want to wrap this up with I want you to commit in front of everybody here on the show that you'll take down the Bautista poster in your room tomorrow.
What time tomorrow?
Okay. 10 o'clock, live tweet it.
Okay.
All right. Awesome. All right, guys. Next up, we'll go inside some numbers, and we're going to start with what's sorely overdue on the show, which is a big old celebration of Nick Markakis's 2018 campaign.
Yeah.
So Fangraph has Markakis at 1.9 WAR so far this season, second in all of the National League to A.J. Pollock. Through most of Sunday's games, he led the National League in hits, second in batting average, sixth in on base, eighth in OPS, his six homers and 10 doubles helping there. Back to where the credit goes, right? I mentioned this earlier. The Braves would not be 9 games over .500 without Nick Markakis this year.
Right. Freddie Freeman is not having the season he's having without Nick Markakis this year.
Yeah, behind him. That's right. So, Ham, first off, it's just amazing. Incredible. Never thought I would look forward to Nick Markakis at bats.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that it's a left-handed compliment, but I mean, I really am like, oh, good. Markakis is coming up.
Well,
good things will happen.
Well, and our ceiling for him, sorry to jump in, but our ceiling for him was we hope he played well enough to get traded at the deadline.
Right.
And I think he has changed the narrative. We are contending because of Nick Markakis, and I think we need to keep him to keep contending. Right, I mean, I think he is a big reason that we are doing well. So his ceiling has certainly moved from what we thought his ceiling was before. And,
well, do we all agree? Sorry, go ahead.
No, and he's just exciting to watch on the field. I mean, he's another Freddie. It's like having two Freddie Freemans in the lineup, one right after the other. And obviously,
always getting hits,
and for power and tons of doubles. I mean, he's got 7 homers this year, Marquez. He had 8 all of last year. I will say, nothing helps like a contract season, right? I mean, I think
apparently.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, I don't blame him. You know, if you're thinking how I play every game is going to impact my next 2 to 3 years, and you're under sort of a performance review, you're going to try harder, you know? And I mean, I don't think that means he wasn't trying hard before, but you can't help but really put everything into every moment. And so I think it's paying off. So I think hallelujah for Nick Markakis this season. We should ride him all the way through wherever this season goes.
You know, I will say
– not sign him.
Well, yeah, we'll get to that in a second. I mean, I rarely watch the Fox Sports South pregame show, but I was earlier this week, and Nick Green was doing a sort of video board thing, and he showed a mechanics sort of change, a stance change in the batter's box for Markakis, that he's crouched down a little bit more as he, as he's loaded up at the plate and starts his swing, that there's not as much movement and he's in sort of more of a powerful position. So Nick Green's point was that Markakis made a significant change and it has led to some of the success. So, I hope that that's part of it too, because that's the kind of thing you could just ride all year.
Yeah.
So do we all agree that it's the trade deadline, the Braves are still in contention, we do not move Nick Markakis? Right?
No way.
No way.
I mean, he
I agree.
The only value he has is as a Brave. You're not getting anything for him in a trade, even with this season, because he's a rental and he's old. The ideal spot for Nick Markakis right now is in a Braves uniform playing right field.
Yeah.
So does this season change anything for you guys about what the Braves should do with Nick Markakis when his contract is up at the end of the season?
We shouldn't sign him. We don't need him. I think he's playing above his talent level right now or whatever. He's peaking because of the contract here or whatever. But I think, at the end of the season, he'll be 35 going into next season. Is he going to command? Are you willing to give up, $33 million for 2 years of him, or $50 million for 3 years for Nick Markakis?
Well, and that's the thing. He will certainly get more than 1 year.
Yeah.
And 1 year is the most we would need to sign an outfielder.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't think he has this season again. I think this is a bit of an anomaly. I don't think we're going to see this power again. I think he's clicking right now, but I don't think it's sustainable over a longer term contract. We've had him for that, right? We've had him for 4 years. So with Pache, with Peterson, lot to happen in that outfield. I don't think we need Nick Markakis beyond this year, as good as he is. And I hope he continues to have a great season, and I'm grateful for it.
Yeah.
And you got to figure, if the Braves do sort of carry this, or at least have some modicum of success this year, say win 85 games or something like that, that one of those spots, with Riley, maybe third is out of the equation, but you got to figure that the Braves are going to have to upload one of these positions, and it's probably going to be the outfield, don't you think? I mean, they're either going to do it there. They obviously need to fill some holes in their bullpen. And maybe a starting pitcher. But if we're going to sort of take this to the next level, they're going to have to bring in a player to fill one of those spots. And it seems most likely that it'll be outfield other than Ender and Acuna.
Right. I mean, it's a left fielder.
Yeah,
right? It's a left fielder.
Because you're
going to move
play?
Acuna. Right.
For the Yankees.
I am still holding out a modicum of hope that the Braves sign Bryce Harper in the offseason.
Me too.
Yeah,
for like $450 million.
Yeah, but there'll be like a after 3 years, there'll be an opt out, and there's ways to do it. I would immediately become a big old Bryce Harper fan.
I would be a Braves fan. I would never be a Bryce Harper fan.
Let's have that conversation after it happens.
I will gladly. And it would have been the same thing if they had signed Barry Bonds back in the 90s.
I just want to make a mark of this. Episode 401.
That's fine. Trust me.
Kurt says,
Now, my kids might love Bryce Harper as an Atlanta Brave, and that I'll support that and buy him a jersey or whatever they want to do, but not
see,
me.
See, Kurt, I dug in like this early on Bautista, and I paid the price. I want you to know that.
They are at similar points in their careers.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much the same situation.
Absolutely.
And it stings. I'm just warning you.
All right, so guys, it has gotten ugly fast for Brandon McCarthy. After giving up 11 earned and 31 hits over his first six starts, over his last two starts, he's given up 14 earned, three more, and 23 hits, only eight less. And as if it needs to be said, he's looked bad doing it. I mean, way too much of the plate, missing very few bats. It is grim right now. So, Kurt, if McCarthy's trajectory continues, where do you go next?
I would imagine they just bring Gohara in from the bullpen to start again. That seems like the most logical thing to me. If you're looking,
if that's the case, shouldn't they just send Gohara back tomorrow?
I think they should, frankly.
Yeah, come on.
It seems sort of silly that they brought him up here to be a reliever, unless they think that that's where he belongs now.
If there's something they thought from a psychological standpoint would help him to be up here. But otherwise, I don't know. Yeah, I didn't get it either.
And again, you know, there obviously are young guys that are right there, but you wonder how much younger. I mean, Colby Howard has pitched really great on Sunday for Gwinnett. He's 3-1 with a 1.71 ERA. So,
Lucas
107
Sims.
Whip. Lucas Sims has looked good, but so there are
Forget
guys.
Sims.
That are
Don't mention yeah. Sims again.
Max Fried.
Yeah, Fried.
So there are options that are readily available. It's just you wonder how young you
Sanchez?
Can be.
Right. Sure. I mean, Sanchez is you know, maybe a stopgap, right? Until Gohara looks like he's really right again, or Fried just continues to look good because Fried's given up six earned runs over his last four starts. You know, I think that they want Gohara to be that guy, but he needs to look better than he has. He looked decent in those three innings he pitched earlier in the week, but he's got to get more consistent for sure.
Well, and he just needs to throw more. I mean, he needs.
And
more
don't
starts.
You think Gohara is still sort of after you know he missed basically the entire spring? I mean, don't you feel like he's still sort of kind of getting things together?
Yeah, for sure. And losing his dad. I mean, the whole thing is a big old.
And being way too fat.
Yeah, that too.
But we're not in a place where we have a lot of options. We do not need to let McCarthy keep looking bad.
Yeah, agreed. I mean,
well, how many more starts do you give him? I mean, he as you mentioned earlier, Steve, he pitched really well at the beginning of the season. He's had two bad starts.
I give him
so,
two more.
Yeah, I think two more.
Ham, who's ready to build a Jose Bautista statue with SunTrust Park, but what's McCarthy done after two more?
Come on,
hey.
Kurt, the things I was saying was funny. What you did was just mean.
Yeah.
That's my role.
All right, guys. Lastly, let's make it 20 scoreless innings over Newcomb's last three starts and a 1.7 ERA over his last seven starts. He is for real. And, guys, it's really, really good, too, because Andrelton Simmons is slashing .343, .406, .507 right now.
Ugh.
Remember when Simmons was just never going to find his bat?
That's insane.
It is crazy.
Well,
it's
what's
insane. But,
what's Eric Ibar doing right now?
Yeah, exactly. Ha-ha.
Wait, that doesn't make sense.
The Admiral.
Exactly.
I do have to say the best thing that Eric Ibar ever did for us was allow you to ask John Schuerholz about Eric Akbar, Steve.
that was
the highlight of his Braves tenure.
Absolutely. No, but guys, it's amazing how quickly it all turned around, and he really is looking like he's going to be the staff ace. I mean,
yeah.
It's incredible. And
yeah.
And Saturday night, he didn't even have his best stuff, and he still only gave up one hit. You know, Didn't Newcomb walk four guys in
he
that
did. He
start?
Walked four on, and then he walked three on Tuesday. I mean, both nights he was like 60-40 strikes to balls, so he can get even better.
Right.
I think he's missing still on a lot of pitches, and he's able to overcome it, but he's only going six innings, right? He threw 108 pitches Tuesday night, I think 102 on Sunday's game. And only going six. So I think as he gets even more accurate and precise, he'll be able to go even deeper. I mean, he's just he is a solid number three now, and I think his ceiling is number one, right? Yep. Or a good number two.
Well, I agree. The Braves sent out that stat today, which I retweeted, but that he became the only Braves pitcher over the last 110 seasons to allow two hits or less and no runs in three consecutive starts, which is pretty amazing. One, that it's 110 years. Two, the pitching that has come through the Braves organization over that 110 year period, that no one else has done that. That's pretty special.
We're talking Derek Lowe, Javier Vasquez.
Yeah.
Right. KK.
Yes.
Kenshin Kawakami.
There's been some pitchers. Bartolo Colon.
All right, guys. Next up, we'll look at the weeks that Albies and Acuna had. But first, a quick break. So Ozzie remained in the leadoff spot again this week and went 5-for-28 with two homers and six strikeouts. So, you know, on the one hand, they're not compelling numbers. Frankly, the last 2 weeks, not really compelling numbers from Ozzie, except for some really big hits, some home runs. And it still feels good and dynamic and exciting to have him at the top of the lineup. But I do think that Ender is coming and that Ozzie's going to move down. I think that's going to be this coming week.
So what's the lineup then, do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think they still keep Acuna in the two. And so Ozzie's like five, you know, I think Ozzie's five and then Suzuki's six. And then
you don't put Ozzie two and Acuna five.
Maybe. I just think I think Acuna looks good in the two.
Yeah.
But it's going to be that. It's going to be the two and the five, I think, will become Ozzie and Acuna. Yeah. I really do. All right. And Acuna went 4-for-23 with a homer. He did have two walks in Sunday's finale in Miami, which was a good sign as well. I kind of thought that Snitker was going to give Acuna a day off on Saturday or Sunday. I think he could have used it, but it was not to be. Maybe Monday in that makeup game in Chicago. But, you know, Acuna had that home run in Tampa, which was the game winner, right? And it was massive, that shot.
Yeah.
But he could probably use a quick break. All right, guys, shot in the dark. Our crazy predictions for the week that just concluded. And we'll begin with our listener shot in the dark. We actually have two this week to review. First up is Joey Poole, who predicted that Flaherty would tear it up in the Tampa Bay series. But Snitker had other things in mind and started Culberson at third for both those
Good
games.
Lord.
So sorry, Joey.
It's its own segment on another show.
Next up, Harrison Clay predicted that Acuna would bat over 400 for the week with two-plus homers, two-plus doubles, and a triple. So Acuna only hit 174 this week with one home run. So thanks, Harrison, but not quite. All right, so let's see how the three of us did. Ham, you predicted that the Braves would score 38 runs or more this week. The Braves tallied 32. Mm. So close. Curtis, you had Newcomb and Soroka going 3-0, six earned or less with 22 strikeouts. So Newcomb had two wins with 12 total strikeouts. Soroka had one earned run, seven Ks, no decision. So over three games, they gave up one earned run combined, only had 19 Ks, and there were only two wins. I mean, it's a tough loss for you, Kurt. But,
thank you, Jose Bautista.
Exactly.
Should I? I'll put something on my statue for you, Kurt.
A koozie.
A koozie.
That's right, on each hand.
Yes.
Which is how it looks like he feels.
Yes.
So
he feels with oven mitts on.
So sticking with Bautista, my shot in the dark was that Bautista would hit three homers this week, two in Tampa. He did actually have one. It was in Miami. So 2 weeks into May, and it's still zeros across the board. So, guys, what do you have this week, Hammy?
I have that Albies, Acuna, and Freeman as a trio. They collectively hit six homers, drive in 20 runs, and score 20 runs over the seven games this week.
All right, Curtis, what do you got?
Well, you mentioned him. He is a coming. Ender will bat over 350 with two homers and three stolen bases.
God, Ender's stolen base tear is just so fun. So fun.
I love it.
All right. Yeah. And I've got Bautista will no longer be a Brave by the end of the week.
Wow. How quickly they fall from shot in the dark 1 week to the next.
Well, look, I tried to turn things around for him with that shot in the dark, and it didn't work. And now it's time to just jump ship. All right, folks, remember that you get to play two each week. So don't forget to get your shot in the dark in via Twitter before first pitch on Monday. Remember, Monday's game is a early afternoon game with the Cubs. And if we pick yours, we'll discuss it on next week's show, and you could win an ABT koozie if you hit it exactly. All right. So, guys, let's look at the week ahead. Seven games this week, one makeup game in Chicago against the Cubs, and then three in Atlanta with the Cubs, followed by three with the Marlins. And let's look at the matchups. So in the makeup game in Chicago, Tehran faces Jose Quintana and his 4.42 ERA. Although a lot of that was his first few starts, which were not good. He's been really shut down in the last three games. The Chicago series continues in Atlanta. Game one will be Folty versus Yu Darvish and his 6.0 ERA.
Ooh.
Yeah, seriously. Next up, Brandon McCarthy tries to right the ship against Tyler Chatwood and his 3.35 ERA. Chatwood's been quite good. And the final game of the Cubs series will be Soroka against John Lester and his 2.66. So nothing easy there with the Cubs. On to the Miami series. Staff ace Sean Newcomb faces Jarlene Garcia and his 3.14. We hit him for three earned at the end of this week. Next up, Julio's second start. He'll face Jose Urania in his 4.38. We got three earned on him. And then to close out the week, Folty gets his second start, and he'll square off against Yi Chen, who we didn't face in Miami, and he has a 10.22 ERA.
Ooh.
That was from a 9-run performance he had last week. All right, so Curtis, what do you think? What are the Braves doing this week?
I think they will go 2-2, 4-3.
So split with the
lose at Chicago, go 2-1. Is that the math? Yeah, and then 2-1 against Florida.
I got the same.
I've got 5-2. I think they're going to take three from the Cubs, and then two from the Marlins. Bring it.
You think
it's worse than this week?
You think we win tomorrow in Chicago?
I do think we win tomorrow in Chicago. Yeah.
Absolutely. We're a good road team.
We're a very good road team. Tehran's been unbelievable. Quintana has been good lately, but, you know, he's not infallible. Yeah, I think we win Monday in Chicago. All right, folks, that is the show. Remember, you can find us at Blog Talk Radio, as well as iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spreaker. As always, you can find us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com to access all of our shows and to post in our comments section. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk and to like us on Facebook. Thanks again for listening, and go Braves!
Thanks for listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves. To find new shows, to post in our forum, or to send a comment, please visit us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com.